Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, March 31st, 2017, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is 41 degrees, pouring with rain. It says heavy rain fog mix here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Ubiquitous Big Brother, Frequencies, Mad Science, and Directed Energy. We talked about all kinds of things. I think we rudely got cut off by the bumper at the end of the show. We started looking into some of the, not even sure what we were looking at. I don't know. We were looking at something. There's all kinds of connections here that I wanted to tackle, and some of the stuff we've talked about and some of the stuff we haven't. But I'll tell you what I watched last night. I watched a few interviews with Nick Begich. I have not listened to Nick probably since 2011 or 2012. But Nick Begich was the son of a U.S. senator. And here's something that was pretty interesting if you didn't know. He professionally, he was involved in politics as an activist. He was also on the teachers' board and won all kinds of awards and stuff, but he never actually taught. But he was always a lover of science and started digging into things. But his father, I saw an interview with him yesterday where he was saying his father was part of the Warren Commission, and he had a friend who was a senator as well who came to Alaska to try to help him get reelected as a senator. And this friend of his that was also in the Senate had been part of some of these commissions that were trying to uncover some of the misdeeds that the alphabet agencies were doing back at that time. And their plane went down and they went missing. Nick found out 20 years later that even though officially, it had been claimed that the plane had never been found. I thought I heard him say that 20 years later, they discovered the FBI did find the plane, and there were two men who were alive, and they never recovered them. Now, it's very interesting, but that was kind of what made him start digging into the machine to discover what's really going on. And he spent a lot of his life trying to expose what's going on at HAARP in Alaska. Who is involved has led him to this military industrial complex. He's done some real hard-hitting research into exactly how this works and what the biological effects would be. And I would have to say, if there is a foremost authority in electromagnetism and alphabet agencies and the war machine, the government, mind control, directed energy weapons, it would be Nick Begich. I wish I could play clips because I had some interesting stuff I saw last night. But maybe what we'll do is early next week, maybe I'll snag one of those interviews and we'll just put it into a show. Because I can do it if I put it into an MP3 and just air it. But there's no way for me to do it now with this new version of Skype they forced on us to be able to play a clip on my desktop any longer. So, I guess we're going to take a look at some of the stuff I pulled up yesterday. One of the things that was interesting is that Begich was talking about geospatial satellites and how they are literally able to track, bag, and tag everything from space. We'd known that. I mean, even when I was a kid, I don't mean like 5, 6 years old, but maybe like as a teenager, or maybe up around college age, maybe the 80s, I remember people talking about being tracked by satellites, that how they could see your license plate from space. And I know it sounded kind of fantastical, and maybe it was back then, maybe it wasn't. But back when I was in college, my boyfriend and his roommate got arrested. They were engineers. I mean, one was a physicist, an electrical engineer, and the other one was a physicist who was looking to become a meteorologist. So, yeah, they were troublemakers. But there were all these Star Wars protests going on campus back then. This probably was 1980. Let's think about this for a minute. 1988 or 1989, if I had to put a time period on it. And I really didn't know much about Star Wars at that time. I remember Ronnie Reagan. I remember that we didn't like him very much because he was a war monger, but he wanted to create the Star Wars program, which would be lasers from space and other types of directed weapons with the eye in the sky, watching everything. And my boyfriend and his roommate were playing some stupid game on a Friday night called Find the Silver Button or something. And they had to run around campus. I think they had a couple beers in them. They had to run around campus and see who found a silver button first. And they ended up on like the third floor of this building on the roof, which you had to climb this little ladder outside to get there. And it was the building where the president of the university resided, where his offices were. And they found the silver button to his private elevator. And the next thing you know, boop, 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 the police came. And these two were on the ground face first. They took my boyfriend's fountain pen because it was a potential deadly weapon. And they called me from the local police department's headquarters for trespassing. It's kind of funny, but it really wasn't. They weren't doing anything. But anyway, that was my first lesson into what Star Wars was, because the police arrested them because they thought they were Star Wars protesters who were going to start sabotaging things. I was like, what the hell is even Star Wars? It was a movie I saw in 1977. Then I learned a little more about it. So anyway, but these geospatial satellites have been around for a long time. If you go to Google Earth and I think you have to install a layer. It's a KLM file, I think they call them. KLVs, I don't know. I haven't done that in a long time. But there are these different features you can add to Google Earth. And they are files, and you just kind of install them, and then bloop, you see way more on Google Earth. Well, there's one that's the satellite map, satellite tracker map, and you can zoom way out into space, and you could see every single body that is man-made that is floating around Earth. And it is amazing, and not in a good way. It looks like you have entire swarms of angry bees all around the Earth. And I mean, that's satellites from all the different countries. It's space junk from all the different countries who've sent things up and never brought things back. Now, DARPA, I saw recently, was they put out an RFP looking for space garbage men. And they are planning at some point to start going and retrieving some of that space garbage, which is a good thing because we're just such dirty, dirty humans. But I also saw that there was some sort of surveillance system. Obama inked an executive order last year that, of course, was about keeping us safe. It was about watching for collisions from space, whether it be from asteroids or from space junk. And we have to be careful because every time we send some sort of spacecraft into space, and this is why they have to track all that stuff, is all it's going to take is a stray screw or a straight piece of metal. I mean, spaceships, even though they might look like they're floating slow, they're not. They're doing hundreds of thousands of miles a second. And all they got to do is get hit by a little stray piece of space junk, and it pops a hole in their capsule, which wouldn't be a good thing. So I can see why they have to have some sort of surveillance. But on the other hand, that surveillance should be pointing outwards towards space, not inwards toward Earth. And it appears that they are doing both. So, Begich, he talked a lot about how they can see all, they can do all. They have all kinds of different surveillance technologies. And a lot of it is in the air, in the sky, in space, watching all of us. This article by Antimedia had talked about an alphabet agency called the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, or NGA for short. It was one that at one point Obama was afraid of, but then I guess he discovered its powers and he expanded it further as a part of the surveillance network. says, like the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, like the National Security Agency and the CIA, the NGA is an intelligence agency, but it also serves as a combat support institution that functions under the Department of Defense. So, I mean, this is kind of like the whole DARPA innovation incubator. You know, they're like, oh yeah, they create great things. It's moving science forward, but it's doing it for the killing machine, i.e., the DOD. Well, we have this division now that has these satellites, and if I didn't know any better, I would almost think that we never ended Star Wars. If you remember back in the 80s, we said, oh no, we're not doing this anymore, we promise, we're stopping. Wernher von Braun had actually warned about the weaponization of space, and it was a pretty dangerous thing we were doing, and we said that we wouldn't do it anymore. I don't think we ever ended that program. If you want to know my gut feeling, I don't think we ever ended any of it. Just like the biological warfare program after Nixon inked that agreement. And we said, nope, we're not doing it anymore. Only in a defensive posture. Only to make sure that we have vaccines in case, you know, we get biologically attacked. We could protect you, but we're not going to develop any type of biological weapons anymore. Wink. My fingers are crossed behind my back. And that's exactly what they did. And it's coming out now. You see all these mad science departments. It never ended. They just kind of moved it. Instead of being in a single federal facility, they now are sprinkle funding to all of our universities and all the big research hospitals. And they're having the public do the work. You know, in the one interview I watched last night, Begich actually referred to how the scientists and academics have been helping all along develop all this technology. And they were calling it the scientific, the military scientific academic complex. And it's horrifying because we even found out, going all the way back to the 20s with Bell Labs, all these smarty pants that work for Bell Labs. I started searching some of their names because they had the listing for every scientist who invented each technology. So you could just plug their name in, look at their Wikipedia, see where they went, and what they did with their lives. And I was finding time and time again that a lot of these people were passing from Bell Labs to places such as academia or places such as pharmaceutical companies or technology companies after the fact, helping them out. And I think it's always been that way. It's been a revolving door. You know, we even see that with things like the federal government and Monsanto and these scientists coming in and out. And it's all the good old boys network. And it really is disappointing to me to realize, like, we've just been discovering in our recent past, and then it kind of went into our little more distant past, and now it's gone way into our past for like the whole 20th century. How much further back does this go? But it's very saddening that we are afflicted with this human brain disease, it seems, where we have to be deceptive, we have to be murderous, secretive, manipulative, and controlling to the masses. Now, I saw something else that bothered me. I'm trying to remember whose quote it was. Zbigniew Brzezinski. Zbigniew Brzezinski was quoted somewhere in something I was reading yesterday about how eventually, in the future, they're going to be able to control people's minds in order to control the public. Now, he was the famous person who said that it was easier to kill than to control 1 million people. But maybe it was because science wasn't quite there yet. I'm thinking that their plan is to be able to control 1 million plus people all at once, and the way that they could do that would be from somewhere like space and some of these new technologies. So right near the end of the show yesterday, we had found a story from RT. I had mentioned how some of our research, according to our government, and how some of our research began into microwaves And some of the biological effects was because back in the, I don't remember when it was. I think it was maybe the 60s. And actually, this says even more. Into the 60s, I thought, though, that they had been, Russia had been bathing the U.S. embassy in Russia with microwaves, and they were detected. They sent our alphabet agencies on a task to discover what the biological effects would be. But we found out some disturbing stuff when we started digging into that. Soviet Union vied with the U.S. in mind control research, competing with the U.S. during the arms race. The Soviet Union put extensive effort into unconventional research, seeking to outflank its rivals in understanding behavior control, remote influencing, and parapsychology, a new study has revealed. And what's even more scary about all this is that we know this arms race has been going on for a very long time. And you know, with this CRISPRing and that, we have also another arms race going on between the US, places such as China. You know, any of the big boys who get behind here are going to be the ones who are potentially going to be beaten in a war. And so we got to play this keep up with the Joneses with all of these completely insane technologies. And I had to laugh because Beckett had even said that, you know, the technologies that we have today kind of make nuclear weapons look sort of old school passe. And I kind of joked about that before, like, oh, nuke schmooks. So yesterday, because it is, I mean, we're talking like science fiction weapons now that could do all kinds of insanity. And we ran across when we really dug into our brain research, and this wasn't brain influencing, this was just a part of the brain project. We ran across a statement that a scientist had made at one point about how we really need to have like a central command and control brain surveillance center. And I was like, what? What is that all about? Like, why would they be wanting some sort of brain command and control center? Well, it makes a lot more sense now as we're looking at this other piece of the pie. You know, we already have neurological surveillance as a part of the 21st Century Cures Act, which I see a few people are finally starting to wake up to. And it makes you wonder what quote unquote non-invasive surveillance means. Anyway, so this survey published by Cornell University is based upon open scientific and journalistic materials, and it provides an overview of the unconventional research that the USSR did and then its successor Russia between the period of 1917 and 2003. The report by Sergei Kurnatch, and I looked at it, I don't know, it was a lot of information, showed that unconventional weapons took the scientists in both countries to areas bordering science fiction, which nowadays would be seen in TV programs featuring UFOs, the supernatural, and superpowers. That's what I'm saying. Like, we literally are dealing with technologies that only were thought to be in the realm of science fiction. The future is going to be a really strange place, guys, with minotaurs and anthropomorphized robots that look like humans. In the Soviet Union, among the areas of particular interest were, for instance, the impact of weak and strong electromagnetic emissions on biological objects, quantum entanglements in macroscopic systems, non-local signal transmission based on the Anharabov-Bohm effect, and the human operator phenomenon. Now, I found a study. Since they really have not put out much of anything new in the recent past, and where did it go? I think it's here. No, is it here? Yeah. It looks like some smarty pants out there, and I'm going to give a hi ho to John Michael Williams out of Oregon in 2012 and then updated in 2016. John Williams put out a research paper, and it looks like, from what he says in here, that he did this on his own, but he appears to be a pretty smart physicist. and scientist, and he started looking at some of the biological effects of microwaves, which would include the thermal and the non-thermal mechanisms. Obviously, the thermal is kind of what happens in your microwave oven, and that would kind of like burn your brain. And then there would be the non-thermal, which can do things that give you what they call microwave hearing. That would be some of that voice of God technology. And we're going to look at some of that here as we're coming up because I found a lot more. But he really wanted to find out whether or not it's possible. And he did all kinds of experimentation. He looked at all the numbers. He has all the smarty pants formulas that some of my engineering friends, I used to sit with them and do my English homework, write my papers while they'd be doing their high-end differential equations at the table in the lounge. But he did all the math on this stuff, this John Williams. And took a really independent look. There was no funding whatsoever that was provided, and he stated that he is an independent researcher that wanted to find out for himself what these technologies could actually do and what the effect on living biological tissue would be for microwaves. Now, remember, when we looked at this electromagnetic spectrum, microwaves are up there just above the television spectrum, right above your FM broadcast. And in the microwave range is not only where your microwaves work, that would be your 2.4 gigahertz, but also your cordless phones, 2.4 and 5.8. And also we're going to talk about 60 gigahertz. That was something that Camille sent me the other day, but that'll be later in the show. Also, our wireless routers, our 802.11 Wi-Fi wireless routers work in the microwave range as well. So, and our cell phones, and we are being bathed on a daily basis by these frequencies. So, I mean, don't even take the science fiction stuff into account if you don't want to believe it. But we should be concerned about the fact that our 20th and 21st century lives have put us in the way of microwave transmission for probably at least the last 20 years on a daily basis. We have and probably even more because we had a microwave in the 80s, real old school one that was kind of part of our stove, but it was inside the stove. You had a stove, it had a window in it. And I remember that was kind of the coolest thing about this new stove is that it had a window in it. But it also had like a microwave beam generator in the bottom of it. And you could use it as a stove, turn it on and make it hot, or you could use it as a microwave. You would close the door, and the door had a lock on it, just like the locks for the self-cleaning ovens. And then you'd push the button, doot, 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 and set the time, and then push the on button. And this thing, I mean, I can't even imagine what type of radiation we were exposed to in the 80s with this thing. I go, wah! And I remember standing in front of it and looking in the window and watching it cook. It's just horrifying. It's horrifying as to what we have been exposed to. And I mean, I can guarantee you in the 80s, nobody knew anything about this stuff. I was always leery of microwaves myself, honestly. I do not have one now. Ours broke probably 4 years back. It just stopped heating. I mean, we had one because everybody had one, and we got it before. I really had too much of an idea, and it was very convenient, of course, but I never liked eating microwave food. I would only use it for things like reheating, not for cooking. Maybe a potato if I wanted to make baked potatoes, and they take so long, but you know what? I do everything in the oven now or in a pan, and we chucked out the microwave when it broke. I didn't even get it fixed. It was a nice one that matched my stove and everything, but I was like, get that thing out of here. I don't want it. So anyway, okay, so this, I think his name was John Williams out of Oregon, a report by an independent investigator, biological effects of microwaves, thermal and non-thermal mechanisms. It says some of this present paper was actually submitted in 2001 to the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, i.e., the FCC, as a comment on the unlicensed operation of ultra-wideband devices. And it is available for download as well, which I did. I downloaded it. But it appears that the FCC didn't do much about it because microwave are still in use and they're expanding it every single day. For over 60 years, it has been reported that microwave electromagnetic radiation has effects on humans which could not be explained by detectable heating of tissue. Now, I'm going to stop for a second. The reason why this is important is because the feds did a study. I told you, after they had detected that they were being bathed by microwave radiation in Russia at the embassy years ago, our alphabet agencies and our scientists started doing studies on microwave radiation and biological effects. And apparently, they didn't seem to come to any grandiose conclusion saying that it was dangerous. So there are others out there who apparently, smarty pants like this one, took a look at what they know just from science. Especially if you were a physicist or an electrical engineer, you'd be looking at this going, wait a second. But that is not true. There are some effects biologically. There have to be. Let's look at the math. And so he actually looks at that exact study. And they put out some numbers about people in the embassies in Russia and the incidences of cancer. And he came to some pretty surprising results that were a little bit different than what the federal government's conclusions were. So I was like, huh, yes, I love smarty pants. Come on, keep them going. You know, if we start all doing stuff like this, you know, just pick your field of expertise or something you really know about and start pulling the threads on that sweater. Let's make it unravel, people, because we have to. It's all lies. You know, everything that they've been telling us, when they tell us it's all safe, you know what? 20 years from now, you're going to find out that it wasn't safe, but it's going to be too late. And then what are you going to do about it? Who are you going to blame when you got a tumor? Or, you know, when you got an arm growing out the back of your head, which I found out they are actually doing weird experiments like that with salamanders. They're trying to regenerate arms. And I was reading this to my daughter the other day, and we were both horrified. They get these salamanders that, just like lizards too, you know, if they lose their tail or their arm, I don't know if lizards can regenerate their arm, but I know they can regenerate their tails. But they're, mad scientists are trying to discover what the mechanisms are for limb regeneration. And there's this type of quasicaudal salamander. They can literally regenerate its entire arm. So they've been able to isolate these cells, and now they're experimenting with them. And in one of the stories I was reading, one of the experiments that they were doing, this salamander literally had extra arms growing out of its body. And I'm like, oh no. It's like my saying of an arm growing out of the back of your head. It's going to happen one day. Don't be the guinea pig 1.0. That's all I can say. Anyway, auditory responses to radar, which is called microwave hearing, has been the best known of these phenomenon. To account for microwave hearing, many studies in the literature have adopted a rate of heating hypotheses advanced by Foster and Finch in 1974. And we show here that the theoretical and experimental studies supporting this hypothesis, and he says it so nicely, are weaker than usually assumed. We develop a simple framework of understanding of electromagnetic radiation that may be used to explain microwave hearing as a non-thermal, non-acoustical effect. We then extend this approach to other contexts, pointing out several fundamental misconceptions confounding this field. Electromagnetic radiation, especially wideband EMR, particularly must have a non-thermal effect on living tissue before conversion to heat. And auditory and tactile sensations, this would be like some of this targeted individual stuff, central neurological disability, and blood pressure loss caused by electromagnetic radiation have been documented. Ding, 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 ding. Except microwave hearing, parameters of irradiation causing such effects have not been explored adequately and remain unknown. There appears not to be any forensic methodology to prove the cause of harm at non-thermal levels. And it's got to make you wonder why there isn't any type of real science to show what these effects would be. And I find very interesting this blood pressure loss caused by electromagnetic radiation, because I don't know about you, but have you heard about those heart attack guns? There were a couple different ones. The one that was exposed by, I don't know if it was the FBI or the CIA, in one of those, what was it called? The Rockefeller Commission during Ford's presidency, where they were digging into some of the misdeeds of the Alphabet Agency. I believe that that was when the heart attack gun came out that was made with these little frozen darts of poison that they were developing in secret labs. Like, guys, the more I spend now 2 weeks, like, really focusing on Alphabet agencies and their misdeeds, and I have got to tell you, it is beyond horrifying. Any country who knew of our doings in the dark, deep shadows must be very afraid of us. And I hate to say it, but I really hope that the rest of the world does not think that the people of the United States are condoning any of this, because we're not. I don't know anybody, except for some of my super brainwashed friends, who might be even slightly for some of the crazy stuff that we are doing in the name of weaponry and quote-unquote keeping us safe. This is going to lead to nowhere but doom and destruction. And it's just very, very scary. Now, remember, too, they can mess around with brain waves, with your body heat, with your stimuli, whether it be tactile or auditory, that potentially it could even cause physical problems, tissue damage. I want to go to the very bottom here. I'm going to link this in the notes. It's a 49-page study that this independent researcher out of Oregon, I just love it. He looked at all of this technology and he applied his education to trying to discover whether or not some of the things that he's read in their studies was true. And he has discovered that no, they were wrong. His conclusion, if you don't want to read it, go down to page 42. Conclusion, bothersome or unhealthful effects of electromagnetic radiation within thermal safety limits have been demonstrated empirically and are supported theoretically. The microwave spectrum in certain bands or under certain conditions probably should be treated more like a pharmacist's shelf than the temperature knob on an oven. So pharmacist shelf, do it only when absolutely necessary, not just turn it up to 475 and bake everybody. Decisions as to safety should be steered by persons more knowledgeable in medicine. Ding, ding, ding. And add to that, human biology, than has been the case in the past, because we just have this FCC that's rubber stamping. We have them just giving out slices of the pie, and you can put any device on there. Don't worry about our children. Don't worry about all of our kids in school that now have wireless networks in school that are all being bathed in this for the entire school day, who then come home to their house that also has a wireless router and phones and a microwave oven and all that other stuff. Don't worry about it. It's not going to affect anyone. Like I said, when it does, hey, who are you going to blame it on? Be too late 20 years down the line. A particular worry, in light of the political controversy at the start of this work, is that the widespread miscomprehension of biological effects of electromagnetic radiation implies that misuse of microwave devices cannot be identified reliably by examination of a purported victim. Means do not exist right now based on any forensic evidence for prosecuting malicious misuse causing distress, pain, injury, or death. And I think in that sentence, he was talking about targeted, quote-unquote targeted individuals, and how there is no forensic evidence. There's been no forensic evidence established. Maybe there is forensic evidence, but no authority has established forensic evidence that any investigator would be able to look for that would denote an attack or damage from microwave radiation on a biological entity. So how frightening is that? So this is the silent secret weapon. You literally could be affected by it. It could cause damage. It could do all kinds of things to you. But there's no trace. And I think the alphabet agencies would actually like it that way. All right, I came upon another story. And this one was from 2012. I read a story about how when Putin got reelected as Grand Poobah, he had made some comments about how they were going to start working on directed energy weapons as part of his new 21st century weaponry arsenal. I was a little taken aback by that because obviously if Russia's doing it, it means either we're already doing it and they're trying to play catch up, or they decided to do it and now we're trying to play catch up. But it's not a good thing. And the arms race does not end, and probably China as well, if I had to take a wild guess. Putin, this is from 2012, Putin targets foes with quote-unquote zombie gun, which attacks victims' central nervous system. It could be used against Russia's enemies and perhaps its own dissidents. Mind-bending psychotronic guns that can effectively turn people into zombies have been given the go-ahead by Russian President Vladimir Putin. The futuristic weapon, which will attack the central nervous system of its victims, are being developed by the country's scientists. And remember, Russia was trying to develop an agency that mirrored our DARPA, too. So it's got to make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside. They could be used against Russia's enemies and perhaps its own dissidents by the end of the decade. Now, this was 5 years ago. We're almost at the end of the decade, so it's got to make you wonder how far they've come. Sources in Moscow say that Mr. Putin has described the guns, which use electromagnetic radiation like that found in microwave ovens, ding, ling, 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 as an entirely new instrument for achieving political and strategic goals. Mr. Putin added that such high-tech weapon systems will be comparable in effect to nuclear weapons, but will be more acceptable in terms of political and military ideology. Like, I really wish I knew what this zombie gun could do. Could you imagine if they could just, like, satellite beam it and turn an entire population into literal drooling zombies? Like, maybe the zombie apocalypse thing isn't way too far off. We've been trying to figure out what they were meaning. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, the general public is a bunch of zombies anyway. Yeah, but, I mean, it could get much worse, apparently. Plans to introduce these super weapons were announced quietly last week by Russian Defense Minister Anatoly Serdukov, fulfilling a little-noticed election campaign pledge by elected President Putin. Mr. Serdukov said the development of weaponry based on new physics principle, i.e. directed energy weapons, geophysical weapons, wave energy weapons, genetic weapons, psychotronic weapons, and so on, is part of the State of Arms Procurement Program from 2011 to 2020. Ding-a-ling. Genetic weapons, guys. This, dig a hole and find a rock, because if this is the future of warfare, and we have other countries, not only our own government, who are developing things like this and then testing them unknowingly on people again, but we have other governments of the world who are looking to develop weapons like this and then use them on countries like us as an enemy. This is not going to be good. Wrap yourself in tinfoil. I think we better start looking at what types of things can deflect some of these electromagnetic weapons. I mean, this is insane. I couldn't even believe, like, these are real news stories, guys. These aren't like somebody sitting in a basement dark corner writing about their fantasies. These are some real mainstream news stories. Specific proposals on developing the weapons are due to be drawn up before December 2012 by, here we go, a new defense Advanced Research Project agency, so their equivalent of DARPA. Research into electromagnetic weapons has secretly been carried out in the U.S. and Russia since the 50s, but now it appears that Mr. Putin has stolen a march on the Americans. Precise details of the Russian guns have not been revealed. However, previous research has shown that low-frequency waves can affect brain cells, alter psychological states, and make it possible to transmit suggestions and commands directly into someone's thoughts, i.e., the voice of God. High doses of microwaves can damage the functioning of internal organs, control behavior, or even drive victims to suicide. Anatoly Tiskonok, head of the Ministry Forecasting Center in Moscow, said, quote, "This is a highly serious weapon. When it was used for dispersing a crowd and it was focused on a man, his body temperature went up immediately as if he was thrown into a hot frying pan. And still we know very little about this weapon, and even special forces guys can hardly cope with it. The long-term effects are not known, but 2 years ago, a former major in the Russian Foreign Intelligence Agency died in Scotland after making claims about such a weapons program to the MI6. Yeah, suspiciously, I'm sure. Sergei Serketh, 43, claimed he was a victim of weapons he said were, quote, many times more powerful than in the Matrix films, unquote. Mr. Serketh died after falling from a Glasgow Tower block with his wife and stepson in March 2010. And while his death was assumed to be a suicide, his family fear that there was foul play. The Ministry of Defense has declined to comment. Well, so then we take a look here. And I have two stories, and we'll go to the older one first, because there's one from 2014 and one from 2016 out of a publication called DefenseSystems.com. This is a government publication that follows a lot of some of the newest technologies coming. 2014, September 26th, Air Force awards $40 million for electromagnetic research. The Air Force, I told you, Air Force and Space Command has a lot to do with a lot of what is going on here. The Air Force is looking to a nonprofit research institute, our academic smarty pants, for the development of advanced antenna and electromagnetic technology to help it improve how it makes use of the spectrum, according to a recent contract award. Now, remember, DARPA, as of 2017, is just looking to turn AI onto the spectrum now so it can multiplex all of the spectrum and decide what to do with it. We should be very afraid of that, because this is taking, we're just going back into the past and getting up to speed. But this DARPA spectrum reallocation AI backend is the culmination of all these years of research on how to manipulate these bands and what their effects are on biological organisms. And now we're going to turn it over to the machine. The Riverside Research Institute, an independent, not-for-profit research organization, was awarded $40 million with an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract, according to a Department of Defense release. Work will be performed in Dayton, Ohio, and at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, looking for electromagnetic technologies to improve command, control, communications, computers, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance programs. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. That's all of them in a nutshell. The Air Force Research Lab created the Research and Development Antenna and Electromagnetic Technology Program, more affectionately known as RADEM. The program seeks a variety of basic, applied, and advanced research. The Riverside Research Institute will work under the program to make technological advances in phenomology, modeling and simulation, signal processing, system design, system development, test and evaluation of electromagnetic or EM systems according to the original solicitation. More specifically, the program will focus on a variety of electromagnetic technologies to improve the detection, tracking, and fusion of data for hard-to-find targets. And remember, when you get up into the millimeter wave, you can literally see through things, including into the ground, into walls, all kinds of things. And they can even use microwave to see through your physical walls of your house. We have a story queued up about that. There's going to be nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. This includes improved radio frequency sensing antennas, laser detection and ranging technology, as well as electro-optical sensing technology as well. The Institute will be responsible for sensor tests and evaluation and the demonstration and distribution of multi-sensor architectures. The program will focus on research on theoretical and computational electromagnetism, sensor resource management, and advanced waveforms. And while many weapon systems are vulnerable to electronic warfare, unmanned aerial systems, yes, killer drones, are especially dependent on the electromagnetic spectrum for guidance and navigation. Air Force officials have been developing techniques to conduct electromagnetic spectrum operations against enemy UAVs. Yeah, and the U.S. has decided, there was an RFP out, I think it was the end of last year, looking for navigation systems for unmanned aerial vehicles for the United States that were using things such as gyroscopes. So if they got knocked out from their telemetry using GPS, that they would still be able to find their position using gyroscopes like they do with space telescopes and satellites. Meanwhile, other defense officials are more worried about the loss of available frequencies to the commercial sector, ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, and they are looking for ways to regain some dominance in the electromagnetic spectrum. So that would explain now this auction that we talked about a few days ago, where they are literally taking some of the spectrum that was given to television, reassigning it, and now they're going to hand it to 5G providers. 5G, I know they're telling you it's for internet in the sky, but remember, it is going to be some of the big corporations, such as the Googles and the Facebooks and the Verizons, probably the AT&T Nokias, the cell phone providers, that all are going to be collaborating to see who gets the spectrum and then how they're going to utilize it. But that 5G internet in the sky is also a part of this CubeSat program. You have the Air Force who's plasma bombing the sky to increase radio communication spectrum for the future of 5G. They're also going to utilize millimeter wave as a booster for 5G, millimeter wave that can see through things. Guys, this is not benign, what they are doing. They are looking to take over a lot of these technologies that maybe were sippy cupped out to the public. You know, we thought that we utilized these things for our benefit, but they are taking them back. They've been utilizing them all this time, maybe without our knowledge, but they want to take them back. And so they're going to reallocate the spectrum. And then you got DARPA going, hey, why don't we just take the whole spectrum back? And we'll let AI run it, and we'll let them figure out how to allocate. Of course, Susie's movie isn't going to be as important as targeting an insurgent in the Middle East. And so Susie will have to wait while her movie chokes along at low definition. And we blast some suspects in the desert with our laser beam weapon. I mean, this is just insane. All right, so now the same publication, DefenseSystems.com, releases a new story last summer, June 30th, 2016. Directed energy weapons making a great leap forward. Oh, it's got to make you feel all good. Paul Shattuck is director and chief engineer for the directed energy systems at Lockheed Martin Space Systems Company. He has been with Lockheed since 1974, with a focus area of the development of beam control technologies for high-powered laser-directed energy systems. He spent most of the 80s developing and testing beam control technologies for the Strategic Defense Initiative, culminating in a simulated ground demonstration of a pace-based laser engagement of enemy ballistic missiles for President Reagan in November 1987. Ding, ding, ding. So these were the beginnings of the Star Wars system. And for 15 years, so I didn't know Lockheed Martin was working on that. For 15 years, he held various leadership roles on the Airborne Laser Program, including program director during the design and development phase and remote site test director, leading the team responsible for integration of this laser beam control fire system on airborne lasers and for all ground and flight tests. He recently spoke with Defense Systems contributor David Walsh about a ramped-up interest in directed energy technology and laser weapons, including Lockheed's Athena test, in which a laser burned through a truck engine a mile away. Since Hughes Corporation Research Division demonstrated the first laser in 1960, has the various types and size and wattages on offer from the industry, DARPA and its kin, changed fundamentally, is the question. And Mr. Shattuck says, well, the most significant change has been the transition from chemical lasers to fiber lasers, and they'll be using fiber optics in the last decade, which has had real implications on the size and the wattage. The fiber laser weapon we're developing at Lockheed Martin, for example, requires less platform prime power or cooling to place the most energy on target and to defeat threats at a longer range. The approach scales with advancement in higher power and lower weight solutions. These lasers also have better efficiency, allow greater use of power to generate high-quality beams that require less time to dwell and successfully eliminate the target. Now, you know where else they're doing a lot of this research I've seen is at the Photonics Institute down at the University of Arizona. I'm trying to remember who they were doing collaboration with. I don't remember if it was DARPA or the Air Force. One of them, they had won an RFP to do some sort of laser research. And I believe there was an experiment that I had written a story about a year or so ago about them using one of these laser beam guns to take down drones. And it literally in a second went and burned the tail right off the thing. And it just crashed to the ground. I mean, yeah, great. Laser beam weapons to shoot autonomous drones from the sky is a great thing to have. But how long is it going to be before they're using laser beams to burn holes in skulls of insurgents like we just saw in that last story? I mean, it can burn holes through things, guys. We're talking directed high-energy weapons. We don't need to spend money on bullets anymore. Oh, no, no. And once we start mounting these things on, like, swarms of drones flying through the sky with facial recognition technology and no human intervention, we better be very afraid, because that was my dream that I used to have over and over and over again as a child, where these swarms of things, flying things with these laser beams, is shooting down on people. It's here, people. It's here. Because listen, he says, we are at the convergence of laser weapon technology maturity and tactical mission needs in the new threat environment, like swarms of drones or swarms of small boats, for example. And on the technology side, government and industry are leveraging advances in fiber optic communications and the power scale from industrial drilling and cutting applications to develop beam combination techniques that lets us create a single high-powered laser beam that can do some major damage, I'm sure. We're also taking advantage of data and image processing speeds from the video game industry, and NVIDIA, who used to make video cards, is now a big part of this GPU processing, graphical visual, graphical processing interface These are the googly eyes of AI. We are using processing speeds from the video game industry to make the beam control systems more accurate and precise. Meanwhile, rockets, mortars, and small unmanned aerial systems are presenting an increased threat around the world. Customers are looking for precise, affordable, rapid response firepower to defend against these threats. And don't worry about it, because weapon systems made of lasers can actually fill that gap. Well, we can continue, or we can bounce to another story. Actually, let's go to this one, because this is going to drop you off your chair. This is where we're going to kick it off tomorrow, 1999, February 1st, out of the Washington Post. When seeing and hearing isn't believing. Gentlemen, we have called you together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the government. So begins a statement being delivered by General Carl W. Steiner, former Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Special Operations Command. At least the voice sounds amazingly like him. But it isn't Steiner, oh no. It is the result of a voice morphing technology that is being developed in 1999 at where the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. Now, remember we talked about 9/11 and those voices from the plane? That was in 2001. Well, apparently in 1999, they had already been developing this at a military facility by taking just a 10-minute digital recording of Steiner's voice. Scientist George Papkun is able, in near real time, to clone his speech patterns and develop an accurate facsimile. Steiner was so impressed that he asked for a copy of the tape because it sounded just like him. Steiner was hardly the first or last victim to be spoofed by Papkun's team member. To refine their method, they took various high-quality recordings of generals and experimented with creating fake statements. Like, how horrifying! One of the most memorable is Colin Powell stating, "I am being treated well by my captors." They chose to have him say something he would never say otherwise, chuckled Papkun's colleagues. Like, I would think this would be illegal, wouldn't you? All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around. We will finish this one tomorrow and continue. Actually, on Monday, have an awesome weekend.
Jarvis Skateboard.